This episode of The Fetish Show could be sponsored by you. We offer exceptionally reasonable rates, and your sponsorship will run right here at the front of the podcast for the life of the podcast, which means it's an exceptionally good deal. If you're interested, get in touch with me, Dirk, that's D-I-R-K, at thefetishshow.com. This podcast is not for kids, so put them to bed, turn out the lights, make sure the mood is right, and get ready for something that's out of sight.
The Fetish Show brings you the latest in alternative photography, modeling, art, and fetish lifestyle. Your host is renowned fetish photographer and BDSM mentor, Dirk Hooper. He is joined by professional dominatrix, Princess Zoe. And now, here's Dirk.
Welcome to The Fetish Show.
Welcome to The Fetish Show. I'm here with the beautiful and talented Princess Zoe. And I'm Dirk Hooper, Lord of the Bedchamber. What do you think about that? See how I worked that in there? I'm starting a new thing.
The self-proclaimed.
Let's pretend like that's been a thing for a long time.
Let's do.
What do you think about that?
Let's pretend.
We're into pretending around here.
That's
so
what do you
what have you been up to lately?
Oh, lots of really cool stuff. Let's see. I guess the most recent thing that I've been up to, you were a party to this last weekend.
Not sure if I'm going to claim any authority on this.
Well, you are king of the chamber
That's
pot?
Lord.
Oh, the lord of the chamber pot? No, what did you
That's
say?
That's the bed chamber.
Oh, okay.
It's very different than the chamber pot.
Okay.
Very different.
Yeah, you know what we've been up to. We went up to no good. We went to go see some teddies this last weekend.
Yes, we did.
At the new and infamous Teddy Bar.
Are we going to name that? Is that a good idea?
I don't know. Should we?
I don't know. It's not like they're paying us anything.
Oh, well, then I guess we could say Little Darlings. It's a great place. If you're going to go see titties, I suggest this
place. It's
not
bad. It's in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah?
So there was lots of titties there. Did you notice the titties?
The chicks were hot.
Yeah, that one girl that like did the ass thing.
Yeah, I kind of like her. I've been thinking about her.
Yeah, I think she liked you too, honey.
I don't think she wanted anything to do with me, actually. I think she liked the dollars that came out of my hands.
What was up with the ass thing? I mean, she, like,
I don't know.
Her
she,
butt cheeks were like, you know.
She had
cool.
She had an intelligent ass.
She damn sure did.
It was completely under control.
She can like slap each side of your face with each butt cheek if you got little.
I kind of liked that. What can I say?
She was all right.
She was not bad.
Not bad at all. Anyway, that's what I've been up to.
All right. Well, recently I went to Tulsa and hooked up yet again. I mean, this is our third podcast, and once again I'm going to mention Carnival Epsilon.
Man, they rock.
I did some pictures of them because they were going to be going on a tour. They asked if I'd do some photos, and I said I'd love to. We ended up spending a whole afternoon working on a big bunch of photos, and they went through like new routines and different outfits, and it was pretty wild. Well, as it turns out, not only did we get a good set of photos, but they were in touch with the creators over at Dark Fairy Subculture Magazine. And just like that, we got a 5-page spread.
Amazing.
In Dark Fairy Subculture issue number 5. Mm-hmm. And it's all full color and it's really cool. So I would encourage everyone who wants to know more about Carnival Epsilon or who just wants to pick up a really cool magazine, we're going to give you a link and you can go and buy an issue of Dark Fairy Subculture. It's done by a really cool group of people. And you should go check it out.
Well, the photos you did of that little Roxy, she's hot. She's got that meat grinder.
That's right. She makes sparks.
Yeah.
She's literally hot.
She puts on that metal meat, or she puts that, she's a metal, what, bathing suit on?
Something that looks like what Xena wears, you know, but it's all made.
Like sparks are flying.
They have created this outfit. She created this thing along with Marcus, and it's incredible. It looks like something you'd see in Hollywood. I mean, it's like an impressive kind of.
It's like a metal bathing suit.
Yes, it's like a Red Sonja metal bikini type thing.
She takes a meat grinder and like puts it right on her stomach or whatever, and like these sparks are flying off.
She does. She makes
freaking rocks, dude.
It is literally and figuratively hot.
She's hot girl.
She is. She's very hot. I like her.
I'll take her.
They also did some other demonstrations and, you know, sword swallowing and sticking utensils up their nose.
Because that's what they do.
They do all that stuff. It's craziness. And they just recently converted a chainsaw into a steampunk chainsaw. Look it up, steampunk. And now they have a routine where Roxy will hold the apple in her mouth, and Marcus will carve things in the apple with a chainsaw.
Amazing.
And they carve my initials in there, DH. How cool is that?
That's really cool.
So anyway, we had a blast. We got a really great magazine article out of it, and I wanted to share that with everyone.
All right.
Also, by the way, you've got a new set of photos up on your site.
I do?
Yes.
Oh, I do.
Yes, you
I'm just kidding.
And some great photographer took pictures of you.
Really?
Yeah.
Just kidding. I
heard that he's Lord of the Bedchamber.
So check out my website. Look under the photo section, theprincesszoe.com, and you'll see my latest and greatest photo expose.
In addition to that, we have a FetLife page, it's a group on FetLife. So if you happen to be on FetLife, then either look
please
up,
join our group. The Fetish
Look
Show.
Look up Princess Zoe or look at me. I'm the Dream King on there.
I thought you were king of the bedpot.
I've got a lot of different titles. And you can look at us up, or you can just look up the Fetish Show and join our group. Yeah. You know, communicate with us on there.
Right. And for the ones that have been communicating with us on there, I'd like to thank you for your pictures of your cocks. I really appreciate that. This is the one time I would like to say thank you for pictures of your dicks. Pics of dicks.
And it's okay to send pictures from women if you want to do that.
Yes, if you're a woman and you have a dick, send me a picture.
Can we have less dick pictures?
No, fuck no. I have pictures of my dick, if you look on my website. And I'll tell you, if I had a dick, I would be fucking uncontrollable.
It's kind of... Your dick is ethnic.
Well, I do have a black cock, but I would be uncontrollable. If I had a dick, I would fuck everything that walked. I'm not... When I strap on my dick, I'm like, come here, baby. Come... Just you right there, lady in the street. Come here. I wouldn't care. I would fuck everything. It's empowering.
That's a problem.
To have a dick. It's not a problem.
You can't just fuck everything.
Well, why not?
Well, you're just not supposed to. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I'm just saying you're not supposed to.
Well, I'd fuck anything that let me.
I'm aware of that. So anyway, also, we have a Facebook page. In addition to the FetLife page, we have a Facebook page. And naturally, it's facebook.com/TheFetishShow.
The Fetish Show.
So find us on there. We got a few people that are communicating with us on there. So... why don't you join them? Tell us some stuff. Ask some questions.
Send pictures of your dicks. Or breasts.
If you have to. And that's all we got. That's our introduction. And next up is the Fetish News.
And now the Fetish Show News Desk.
Today on the Fetish Show News, we have yet another celebrity with some fetish photos that have surfaced. And this time it happens to be Angelina Jolie. An old drug buddy of Angelina Jolie's has sold 8 graphic and lurid photos of the actress to Star Magazine, the Huffington Post has reported. In one set, the now mother of 6 has black tape over her nipples and a dog leash around her neck. Others show her during a 14-hour heroin-smoking bender. In another photo, she has black tape strapped across her mouth, while in a separate one, she wears a blindfold. A black and white shot taken from behind shows her on a bed wearing just a G-string and a cowboy hat. All of this is kind of ill-timed as she's on a promotional tour for her latest action flick, Salt. The photographs have been taken in the year 1999 from an explosive, unauthorized biography by Andrew Morton that is due for release in August 2010, reports the Daily Telegraph. Quote, the photographs are a startling reminder to Angelina of a period in her life I'm sure she wants to forget, a shady piece of her history that she's kept hidden away even from Brad, unquote, celebrity photographer Andrew Morton, author of Angelina, an unauthorized biography, has told Star. So, here's my take on this.
Why don't you give us your take there, Big King?
First off, Angelina is hot.
She's hot.
And if we're talking about photos of her from 10 years ago in blindfolds and G-strings and, you know, with black tape and all that sort of stuff, then I want them.
Well, also, this is pretty subjective. What makes anybody think this is a period in her life that she's trying to forget? How do they know that?
No, you're absolutely right. And I mean, look.
Come on.
No one on this planet, including Brad Pitt, especially Brad Pitt, is surprised by the fact that she's into this shit. I mean, where has everyone been? I mean, what rock is everyone under when you have forgotten? I mean, do you remember when she was with Billy Bob Thornton?
That's right.
And she had like a vial of blood the tattoos and the bullshit. If you didn't know that Angie was a freak, then you hadn't been paying attention.
Well, this doesn't necessarily say freaky to me.
No, I mean freak in a good way.
I mean, black tape across her nipples and a dog leash? Come on.
No, listen.
That's kind of mild to me.
I'm all about it. And frankly, number one, I'm not sure if she cares.
I don't think she should.
I think that this guy who's coming out with this book wants to make this a big scandal, but there's no one on the planet that goes, what, sweet little Angelina?
Oh my God, she had tape and a dog leash.
Please, she has been out with her little fetish S&M proclivities for a good long time.
Oh, go Angelina.
That's the way I feel about it. So our next story is Kinkonomics. As the economy takes a spanking, many women are turning to freelance fetish work to supplement their income.
My, my.
This is from the Daily Beast. Quote, I've seen it before, says Linda. During the tech bust in 2002, women who thought they would always make a decent living in the tech sector lost their jobs. They came looking to Linda's industry for freelance work, and now it's happening again. Professional women whose cubicle-bound careers have been downsized are entering Linda's corner of the gig economy, a corner that involves whips, ropes, and occasionally nipple clamps. With staff jobs evaporating and former 9-to-5ers cobbling together incomes through scattered side projects, freelancing as a dominatrix, or a pro-dom, as industry types prefer to call it, has become a plausible gig option. Though dominatrix work is considered by many to be the hardest in the sex industry, being able to avoid actual intercourse is key to its appeal to everyday women who are just looking to pick up a little extra money. Many freelance doms prefer to work a regular shift in a commercial dungeon with equipment and advertising provided by management. They do much of what you'd expect, specializing in bondage, verbal humiliation, spanking or paddling, whipping, and genital torture. Some aspects of dom work, nipple clamping a customer, wearing a strap-on dildo, allowing a man to worship your feet, are familiar to traditional call girls, but the more rigorous assignments could make some prostitutes faint. Still, working a shift at a dungeon can provide a more similar structure to regular work, which adds a level of comfort for those just doing it as a side gig. The busy night shift works well for women with regular day jobs, but some women prefer the early shift. Neighbors, relatives, husbands, and children are less likely to wonder what you're up to while the sun is out. The money's not bad either. Jessica, a pro-dom in her late 20s, apprenticed at a dungeon before striking out on her own. In Manhattan dungeons, she says, the typical cut on a $200 session is 60 to 40 in the dungeon's favor. To people who make the entire living in the sex industry, professional escorts who get $500 an hour, for instance, such rates can seem abusive, but freelancers see it differently. If you're making $8 an hour at your day job, $80 is awesome, says Jessica. There's no shortage of women willing to work at those rates. Freelance kink work is a more viable option for women today than ever before. Over the past two decades, kink has gone thoroughly mainstream, infiltrating everything from liquor ads to sitcom scenarios to school-supported student groups. And while a prostitution arrest is still a serious worry, legit dungeons operate legally and openly. The New York Post recently reported on pro-dom efforts to form a union and a political action committee. Clients are middle-aged management types, small business owners, dentists, young lawyers, even a few single males who see themselves as casualties of the gig economy. A fence sitter flirting with, not truly committed to kink, might discover that the antidote to a recession resides in the nearest S&M parlor. Though dominatrix work is considered by many to be the hardest in the sex industry, being able to avoid the actual intercourse is the key to appeal to everyday women who are just looking to pick up a little extra money to pay the bills. Because of this, counterintuitive as it sounds, the kink sector tends to attract women who are more risk-averse than traditional call girls and more law-abiding.
Wow.
What do you think about that, Zoe?
Well, let's back up. Something in here I think is very incorrect. On the paragraph where it says that they do much of what you expect, specializing in bondage, verbal humiliation, spanking and paddling, whipping and genital torture. Some aspects of dummy work, nipple clamping, as a customer wearing a strap-on dildo, allowing a man to worship her feet, are familiar to traditional call girls. Okay, wait a minute. No, it's not. This is not traditional call girl work. Also incorrect is the price they quote down here, and I happen to know what New York prices are for call girls and for dummies. $500 an hour, for instance, is incorrect. Your local, most anywhere in the country, call girl goes for $250 an hour. $150 to $250 an hour. So the $500 an hour, for instance, here.
I think they were saying that professional escorts get $500 an hour.
They're inaccurate. They're highly inaccurate. That's $250 to $150 an hour. And it's inaccurate that they provide these services of strap-ons, worshiping feet. Call girls do not provide those services. If they did, then I wouldn't have the clientele that I had. So I know for a fact that's not true. As far as everything else in the article goes, I don't really know exactly what to say about that, except that... why did I become a dominatrix? It has a money element to it, definitely. I do it for the money. I do it for the fun. I do it because I like to. But money is a big part of it. If I didn't
get... It beats the hell out of being in a cubicle all day.
It does. It does. And I enjoy what I do. So just to say that these women are only doing it just for the money, I think that's inaccurate also. I think, yeah, that you would
some
do...
Some are doing it only for the
okay,
money.
Okay, I agree. But they won't be around long.
No, you're right.
They won't be around long.
They're not going to build up clientele.
Right, exactly.
You can definitely tell. I mean, there is a big difference between someone who is committed to learning the business and knowing it backwards and forwards and being passionate about it and just being in it for a buck.
And I have seen some girls that are just in it for a buck.
Oh, God, there is... this is a... There's a thing that I call the drive-by dom, which is typically exceptionally young girls who get on these personal sites, and they think that they're going to make a living by being abusive to people, and basically all they want is just, you know, your money, and they're not really committed to it. They don't have any education about it. They have no passion for it. They just... think, hey, you know, I don't want to go get a real job. What I'd really like to do is just tell some people to give me some money.
I've seen girls show up for a session with no more than just a hairbrush in their bag,
right.
And that's it.
Right.
And then stop the session at 45 minutes when someone's paid you for an hour of your time.
Sure.
Provide absolutely no before time with your client or any aftercare whatsoever. It's pretty much take the money and go through a certain...
And then those ladies
format, and that's it.
And then those ladies wonder why they're not excelling in the business.
I think one clue that I can give anybody looking for a dominatrix is you need to look at the age. Although any person can perform the services, duties, activities of a dominatrix, if you look back through history and you read exactly what a dominatrix is, it's typically a woman who's in her 40s and above. I'm not saying that women below that cannot be as well, but if you've got somebody in their early 20s, and nothing against you girls at all, I'm just saying that typically in history, you read the definition of a dominatrix as someone in her 40s. Not that I am in my 40s, because I am not. I'm 29 every year, and I have been for the last six of them. or five or whatever. I'm just saying. So if you're going to see somebody who is very young, you need to ask what her skill level is. What's her qualifications? What's her training? Who trained her? So anyway.
Yeah, for God's sakes, I hope she's got some experience. I mean, you are paying for, you know, some wisdom and some experience.
It's an investment in your time and your happiness. Sex is not involved.
Right.
You know, you if you want that, then you would go see an escort for cheaper than you would see me.
Our next story is fun with blindfolds, especially when worn by women. And it's from Psychology Today.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's important.
It's heavy shit. As sex toys go, blindfolds are nowhere near as popular as vibrators. But now you're not supposed to laugh at that.
I'm sorry.
But they offer wonderfully erotic sexual enhancement, especially in heterosexual couples, when worn by the woman. Sexologists agree that of the five senses, most men get turned on by what they see. Notably, and you've said that before.
I say it all the time.
Notably, women in sexy outfits and the gyrations of pornography. It's no coincidence that the vast majority of lingerie is worn by women to please men, or that the vast majority of porn is consumed by men. Men love to watch sexually charged visual images. Sexologists also agree that the sense most women find most arousing is sensual touch. It's the feeling of intimacy that excites women. Silk on the skin, a hot bath, spa treatments, a massage, warm fuzzy robes, and extended kissing and cuddling with lots of gentle caresses all over, not just focused on the breasts and genitals. As a result, sex with the woman blindfolded is often a win-win. He gets to see her in all of her glory. And deprived of sight, she can focus more deeply on the joy of being touched. Of course, some men enjoy being blindfolded, and that's fine. Have fun however you like. But deprived of sight, men can't see their beautiful lovers' faces, breasts, butts, hips, and vulvas. When's the last time you've used the word vulva?
When I was shopping for my BMW.
Exactly. And feel aroused by them, they say. And let's not forget how blindfolds fire the imagination. Deprived of sight, many people find it easier to fantasize situations that turn them on. Blindfolds are considered BDSM toys, but you don't have to be into restraint or power play to enjoy them. Just slip one on your lover or yourself and let the fun begin. Meanwhile, some people feel curious about BDSM but reluctant to play that way. If you're among them, a blindfold might offer a comfortable yet highly arousing way to explore a little kink. Blindfold play incorporates the dominant submissive element of power exchange, role-playing, without the intense sensations of heavier BDSM. Blindfolds also provide an opportunity to the top to be tender and nurturing because a blindfolded sub is vulnerable and a loving dom keeps his or her sub safe from harm. Blindfolds are also discreet. If children, family, or friends happen to see your blindfold, it's easy to explain that you sleep better that way. It's not so easy explaining vibrators or handcuffs. Another advantage is that blindfold... I know that you've got a comment in you. Just hang on. We're almost done here. Another advantage is that blindfolds are easily portable and take up almost no space. Vibrators and many BDSM toys are bulky in luggage, and if you travel abroad, do you want customs agent finding them? Blindfolds travel easily and allow you to have a little bit of sexy spice wherever you go. Blindfolds are inexpensive and available at drugstores and from sex toy catalogs.
And can be anything. Doesn't have to be just a typical blindfold. It can be...
No. It can be a silk scarf. It can be a bandana.
Anything.
It can be a pillowcase. I mean, it could really be anything.
It can be.
And so what I'm going to suggest now is, why don't you send us your blindfold stories at The Fetish Show? Send it to me, dirk@thefetishshow.com, and we'll publish them. We'd like to hear them.
So I would like to know how you become a sexologist. That's kind of a cool title.
I don't know. I'm going to add that to my title. Not only am I Lord of the Bedchamber, but also a sexologist.
I think I'd like to be a sexologist.
That's good.
I think this article could quite possibly have been written by a man. Although I agree with...
It's very dick-centric.
I agree with everything in it. I would like to add, though, however, a woman's, she's stimulated by what we hear. Women are, we're stimulated by what we hear. We're auditory.
That still applies. Okay,
we're
but that
auditorial.
Still applies.
Yeah, we're auditorial. So I don't think it's necessarily so much the touch as it is you can focus on what you're hearing.
Right.
Men are visually stimulated. Women are auditorial. Auditorially stimulated. Can just put that out there. So failing to mention that in the article makes me believe it's dick-centric, as you said.
Yes, 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 indeed.
Great, great article, though.
Well, thank you. And finally, my little article that I like here. It's called Girls in Yoga Pants.
Oh, my.
The Yoga Butt Fetish. In the esteemed tradition of nude yoga girls and Playboy yoga, we now have Girls in Yoga Pants, a photo blog dedicated to, you guessed it, women wearing yoga pants. Most of the photos provide us with posterior views of yoga pants, thus celebrating the desirable yoga butt. Either gleaned off of the internet or submitted by readers, the photos fall into several categories, including big booty, amateur, celebrities, Hall of Fame, in public, and actual yoga. According to the Facebook fan page, and yes, we're going to have that listed on the Fetish Show website, which has over 6,000 fans, the website was, quote, created to show appreciation for the world's greatest trend.
Appreciation, yes.
Their about page claims, why look at just girls when you could look at girls in yoga pants? That's the idea behind this always funny, always sexy website. Get your backside fix, feast your eyes on the web's best posteriors, and pay homage to the derriere.
That is such a Dirk Cooper article.
Yes, it is. Oh, it certainly is. I'm a bit of an aficionado of not only the yoga butt, but basically the female butt in general. And if you want to see any of that, then please go to girlsinyogapants.com. Isn't that great?
I can get right over there.
It's totally Girls in Yoga Pants.
I can. Yes.
I mean, the name says it all.
The name says it all.
I mean, look, what, big booty, amateur, celebrities, Hall of Fame. You know, you could be in the Hall of Fame because in my article for Von Gutenberg magazine, it was your ass. But it wasn't a yoga butt. It was like a latex butt.
It was a cat suit ass.
All right. There's nothing wrong with that. I like that, too.
Okay.
Okay, next what we've got is the upcoming events. And the first thing I want to mention is the Glory of Rome party.
You know, it kind of reads like a porn site. Amateur, celebrity, big booty, interracial.
Right. Right. Guy on guy, yoga butt. Right?
Well, see, that's on the same
cross-country yoga butt.
I'm sorry, that just popped in my head.
All right. Gunny Glory Hole contacted me on our FetLife Fetish Show group and wants everyone to know that the Glory Hole girls are throwing the Glory of Rome party on August 28th in Dallas, Texas. The event is Bring Your Own Bottle, and they are bringing the decadence and debauchery of Rome to Dallas.
Wow.
They are still looking for people who want to entertain as a gladiator, wild beast, singer, actor, musician, or any other type of Roman entertainer. This is a private event. To get an invitation, people should email gholeproductions@gmail.com, and yes, I will put that on our website. Tickets are $32, no entry without a ticket, and the venue address is released 24 hours before the event, so it's super secret. You can keep updated with all the Glory Hole Girl events by joining the Glory Hole Well, I almost made it through this whole thing without stumbling on that.
Glory Hole.
The Glory Hole
on
group on FetLife. And you can find out more about the Glory of Rome event there, and you can follow them on Twitter. We'll have all of that for you. And that is the Glory of Rome party.
So Gunny, where's our tickets? Where's our tickets? Dirk and I didn't get a ticket. Did you get a ticket?
I didn't get a ticket.
I didn't get a ticket either.
I didn't either.
I'd like to know more.
And we're kind of close to Dallas, you know.
Yeah, we have no tickets. How do you? I wonder if you want to be a singer, actor, musician. Like what exactly constitutes a Roman singer, actor, and musician? That's interesting.
I have no idea.
I'd like to see that.
I don't know. The only Roman stuff that I know is like from the old Star Trek episodes
where
they visited like ancient Rome. like Captain Kirk and Angel.
It's like a toga party kind of a thing.
Spock, please get that toga off. All right, our next event is
toga off.
Get the hey, come on, look. Kirk and Spock were an item, okay?
They so are not.
They are so an item. Are you kidding me?
Oh, my God. No, they're not.
Oh, my God.
Kirk's such a slut. How can you say that?
That's my point. Kirk would fuck anything, including Spock.
Okay. If you say so.
So next up, we have the Von Gutenberg Folsom Fetish Ball.
Our favorite magazine.
That's right. Von Gutenberg Folsom Fetish Ball in San Francisco is September 25th at Supper Club. This is an official Folsom Street Fair event, and you can get your tickets now at vongutenbergfetishball.com. Of course, we will have this link. They have strict fetish dress code, which means you can expect to see a lot of outrageously hot people dressed in rubber, leather, vinyl, gothic wear, fetish glam, cyber erotic, kinky drag, sexy uniforms, Victorian wear, ultra formal, which is like tuxedos, steampunk, circus freak, and pinup burlesque outfits. It sounds like my kind of party.
Maybe we'll get a ticket to their ball in next March.
You think so? You think that's coming to us?
I hope so. I love to get stuff in the mail.
Interesting. I know you do, including penis pictures, which is Zoe at thefetishshow.com. Finally, on our upcoming events is the Montreal Fetish Weekend, which returns September 1st to the 6th, which is Labor Day weekend. Spectacular themed events, workshops, the art, fashion and photo exhibit, wicked after parties, kinky shopping, VIP exclusive events, the exhibitionist photo tour, incredible performers, and sexy attendees from all around the world is going to be at the Montreal Fetish Weekend. There's already 1,900 attendees on Facebook and FetLife.
Damn.
You can find all about it at fetishweekend.com. And that's the fetish news.
And now, back to the fetish show.
That was the fetish show news. And now, questions and answers.
The fetish show Q&A.
Okay, now it's time for questions and answers. And today we have a question from a submissive named Mel.
Thank you, Mel, for your question.
For Princess Zoe. And he says, I'm Mel. I'm 24, been a sub for almost a year. I saw your profile. You are a very interesting person. I'm just a little curious. You mentioned that you don't have sex with subs or during sessions. How do you do it? How do you resist all those sexual urges, those energies, lustful thoughts of sex in your mind when you are stripping the subs naked and dominating them and even dressing in sensual apparel? So, Zoe, how do you do it? How do you resist them?
Well, that's a great question, and I appreciate you sending that to me. First off, I think I'd like to start with, you have to understand some basic differences between men and women. Men are visual. So you're asking your question from a visual standpoint. You're asking a question from your standpoint, which is normal. What else can you do? So understand that you're stimulated by what you see. Women are auditorial. We're stimulated by what we hear. So when I'm in session with sub and I'm stripping them naked, what I'm seeing with their naked bodies isn't necessarily what's stimulating me sexually. So your question is great. However, it's easy to resist because that's not what my sexual urges are. Okay, my sexual urges isn't because I have a naked sub before me that I want to fuck him. And if I did, think about it, if I have 5 clients a week, say, I'd be fucking 5 new guys a week. That's a lot of guys to be fucking all the time. So I'm extremely promiscuous. Nothing. And I'm not saying anything negative about the question. I'm just saying if you think about it in reality, that's a lot of men to be screwing. When I'm dominating someone, I have to say that the sexual desire has to do with, I don't know, what's going on between me and the person, the connection between the person and I. It's not necessarily what I see, how they're naked, what I'm looking at their dick, thinking, oh my God, I want to fuck the guy. That's
not
it.
You're kind of on the clock.
Yeah, well,
I mean, right?
Yeah, and I have some activities that I want to accomplish with this person.
Right. I mean, you've got an agenda.
I have an agenda, exactly. And sex is never part of it. So, anyway, what else can I say?
I mean, you could ask the same question to some. I'm a fetish photographer. I regularly have nude models in front of me and stuff. And, you know, it's the same sort of situation. I mean, you're there to do a job. And the job is not fucking the model. I mean, the job is to take pictures. You got way too many things. I know people don't believe this, but you got way too much shit in your head when you're doing this sort of thing. You're worrying about composition. You're worrying about the technical aspects of the whether you're getting the shot. You're worried about the model. You know, are they doing okay? Is everything all right? Are you getting the pose that you want?
That's a much better explanation than
five
the one
or 10,
I get. Yeah.
You got another 5 or 10 people. I mean, you know, usually in a photography setting, you got other people in the deal. It's not as glamorous as you think it is. Yes, you have gorgeous models there. They are nude. But while you're in the moment, you've got a job to do.
Right.
I mean, you're the director of the event there, and you got to have your mind in the game. It can't be about, oh, shit, this chick is hot. And I'm sure you're the same way
well,
with the guy. You've got something that you've got to do there.
You have a lot to think about. You're right. And that is a much better explanation than the one that I gave. And it's a very good question, and I think it's a question that a lot of people have.
It is a good question.
Because I do have nude people in front of me. And it is very sexual. It's very sensual. It has all the elements. However, it's not sex. I'm not thinking about fucking this guy. I'm thinking about the activities and the creativity that I'm bringing to the right. session.
And I mean, it's not like you're a nun in your outside life. I mean, you have other things going on besides this. With people who you care about.
Right.
You know, so I mean...
I have a sex life outside of
exactly.
what I do as a dominatrix.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's not like you're like, oh my God, I've got a naked guy in front of me. Holy shit, I've never had this before.
Well, and a lot of my clients I'm not necessarily sexually attracted to. I'm attracted to their personality or their humor or different parts of them, but they're not necessarily somebody I would go out and decide, hey, I want you. You know, I want to fuck you. So,
do you think that this maybe comes from a little bit of arrogance, or maybe a little naivete?
No, I think it comes from being 24.
Like I'm 24. How could you possibly resist me?
No, think about it. Think about what you thought about when you were 24.
Right.
Okay.
If you're invincible, and
if he has naked women in front of him, and he's the dom, he's just putting himself, I think, in that place.
Okay.
Naked chicks in front of him, he's the dom, and
that's
he's
true.
The one in control. He's got them tied up and in these vulnerable positions. How does
right.
he keep from fucking them?
Right.
Well, but we're different. Men and women are different.
In a lifestyle situation, you don't keep from doing that.
If this was a partner, if this was a romantic partner of mine, that would be totally different.
Right.
So, great question, and you gave a great answer. So...
Well, thank you very much for answering the question, allowing me to put my two cents in there, since
it's
I'm not a professional dominatrix.
You could be, though, I think.
You think so? You think I could pass for that?
I think you could.
That's good stuff, man. And that's our questions and answers for this period.
And now, back to the Fetish Show.
That was Q&A. And next up, the Fetish Show Advisor.
The Fetish Show Advisor.
All right, for this Fetish Show Advisor, we're going to talk a little bit about different types of submission in BDSM, the submissive, the slave, and the pet.
Great topic.
And to discuss this, what I'm going to do is take an article that was published in 2008 by someone named Chloe Thorne from AssociatedContent.com. And I'm going to read her article, and then we're going to comment a little bit on kind of how we feel about what she says.
Sure.
In the BDSM lifestyle, there are largely three types of submissives, and when speaking to them, they will tell you with pride which they are and why. The following is a small idea of the differences, in no way giving all the details that are involved with the vast array of men and women that submit. We begin with the submissive. As a submissive, you're in the first tier, let's say, of a dominant submissive lifestyle. You submit to your master. You give up control for long periods of time. However, you have your opinions and your choices, and you still make them. Say you do the dishes and pay the bills. These things are usually are still under your own control. It changes only during set times and parameters. There is also the thought of the power balance between dominant and submissive, meaning that in a submissive role, although you give up the control of power, it's really still 50-50, just in a different setting and under more intense circumstances. Sex is usually a large part of this relationship and mostly where the submissive enters in. Now, don't get me wrong, the intensity is still strong and the punishments and pain are real and overwhelming. However, you have more of an option to stop, and this doesn't spill over into everyday that much. Next up is the slave. As a slave, control is given up completely. The power balance is completely tipped in the dominant's direction. However, keep in mind that this is a choice the slave makes and not something that she or he was made to do. Slaves usually are 24/7. They may work, but when they get home, there is no distinction from normal day to a BDSM day. That person is always a slave from the day they ask for that. As a slave, sex is still very real and alive. However, not always the goal and not needed for the dominant and slave to be in that persona. As a slave, the lifestyle is more intense in pain, humiliation, and just pure pleasure. Something to remember, however, is that as a slave, this does not mean that the dominant asks you to break the law or hurt yourself or that you should obey on a whim. If a dominant is asking you to do things that are against the law or against your moral values, then he or she is not a true dominant. Finally, what we have is the pet. This hasn't always been a classification of a submissive person and is still controversial in some circles. A pet is more on the side of a slave, except for one large difference: sex does not have to be involved. In many cases, it is not. If you have become a pet, it is to give up yourself and obey. You gain pleasure from the control and obeying, not from the sexual play. There can be play, but it is rare in this kind of lifestyle. This submission is one of the most dangerous because you can lose yourself mentally because you so rarely have thoughts of your own. You usually do not work, and although you may discuss things with your dominant, he is the last say. They say he, but he or she is the last say in all things. Ultimately, the deeper you go into submission, the stronger you have to be, which of course is peculiar since you have to give up more of your control with each level. But you have to be very sure of yourself to give up every ounce of control and thought. Taking each step is serious and should never be taken light by dominant and submissive, especially if you want to remain safe, sane, and consensual. So that's the three terms as defined by Chloe. What do you think about that, Zoe?
Well, I think that for one, to understand the information that she's given, you have to have a true understanding of the BDSM lifestyle and the dominant-submissive relationship in general, which I think a lot of times the general public does not. I think there's a lot of people who understand exactly what she's writing, but a lot of people won't. So I think maybe to break it down in a little bit more, I don't want to say layman's terms, I don't know exactly how to put it, but I think that she's exactly right on with the submissive. I know that I have submissives that come and will want to clean the dungeon or they want to do the laundry. They'll want to cook dinner for me. They want to do particular acts. They are submissive and they want to be submissive to me. And it's for general acts. And sometimes they want me to play with them. Sometimes not. Sometimes their need is met just by doing something for me, a submissive act. A slave, I think it's as she said, I think one thing to add to that is that whenever you're a slave, I think the terms are defined in advance. There's usually a contract. So you know that your dom's not going to ask you to do something that you're not really willing to do. That's pretty much predefined. So I think that she covers that briefly. But right. Just to say that a little more in detail. Now, with a pet, I kind of have a different term for that, or a different definition for that term. I think that it can kind of be interchangeable or defined by the relationship itself. I think that you can have certain relationships with people, and they're more like a pet. They're in between a sub and in between a slave. You spend a little bit less time with them. There's more of a commitment than your submissives give you. A little bit less commitment than your slaves give you. That's kind of my definition of where pet falls in. And that, I think is subjected to the dom or herself or himself, how they want the relationship to be.
Well, I'd kind of like to back you up on that by maybe taking a step backward and saying that in the world of BDSM, you have everything from like, couples that are kinky players on the weekend that might, use that blindfold that we talked about earlier or something. They're just going to play around or something. People that are very casual on this thing, and they might use the terms submissive or slave or whatever, or, whatever they've seen in a movie or something. And it's a very casual term, for them in particular, because they don't do the research necessarily. And then you've got the people on the other end of the spectrum that are like the old-time leather guard.
Right.
The people who are very, very serious, and they know exactly precisely what they mean by every term. And you have to go, specifically by what these terms mean.
Right.
And then there's a whole group of people in the middle, which is kind of where I come out. I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm maybe a little closer to the old leather guard than maybe the people who play on the weekend. But I think that in general, what you have to do is instead of maybe reading an article or maybe listening to us, I think if someone defines themselves as a submissive or a slave, or you define the person that you're playing with as a submissive or a slave, then you should have a discussion on what that means.
Exactly.
Because it seems like to me that every time that you talk to people about this sort of thing, that everyone has their own kind of, definition of this
thing. That's true.
And so, you may be talking to someone that go, well, gosh, I'm a slave. And then you start talking to them, a little further, and you realize, well, you're not really a slave. You got a lot of conditions on things. You're not really very serious about this. You like the term slave. You want to be called a slave.
Right.
But, you're not really a slave because you want a lot of, you want a lot of the control.
Right.
In the relationship, you're really a submissive. So in any case, my point is that, these terms are not, legally defined in any dictionary or any article. And you should definitely be talking about whoever you're talking to, whoever you're playing with. You better be having a discussion with them, and you should be doing that anyway. Now, this term of pet, I think, is very interesting to me, because her distinction is that if you call this person a pet, that there's no sex involved. Like, that's the big distinction between being a pet and being a slave.
I don't think that's necessarily accurate.
And I know that I've called submissives pets before, and it was more of kind of a term of endearment.
And there is that, too.
I kind of like the kitten-type submissives, right. Or, kind of cuddly type pets, it's an endearment term that I might, might call someone, but, sex is involved. So it has absolutely nothing to do with that at all. And I think that with pet, you're really in the wildly obtuse area where who the hell knows what that term means. I mean, between any given, 100 people, they're going to define that term differently.
And depending on the dom, too, because I'm telling you in the perspective of a professional dominatrix, which could be different than the perspective of a lifestyle dominatrix, which is a good point for another show.
Right, right.
To have on some other types of dominatrix and discuss more detail what this means to them and what their definitions of these three, submissive, slave, and pet mean.
Well, and let's be honest. This is just scratching the surface.
Sure.
There's 100 million different little titles for both submissives and doms. I mean, you've got, daddy doms and masters and piggy slaves and everything under the, people who like to play as horses and, all kinds of stuff. So,
right.
I mean, there's definitely the whole worldwide spectrum of titles and names. And absolutely, we're going to talk about that. And we're going to talk about it very soon.
Great subject.
Thank you. And so that is the end of the Fetish Show Advisor.
And now, back to the Fetish Show.
All right, Zoe, that was yet another episode of the Fetish Show.
Episode 3.
It's in the bag.
It's in the bag.
We would like to invite everyone to go to thefetishshow.com. You can get links, any videos that we mentioned during the show, more about us, how to contact us.
I'm going to post the actual response to the question.
Right, we're going to put a, in this case, I think she's going to write up a response to the question, maybe a little bit more in depth than what we talked about even on here.
Sure.
Also, I'd like to invite you to visit theprincesszoe.com, which is Zoe's own website.
Thank you.
Also, you could go to my website, dirkhooper.com. I've got a blog there. It gives all the information on what I'm doing right now, if you were interested.
What are you doing right now?
I'm doing lots of important things. I'm saving the world. We have our new Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/TheFetishShow. And if you want to get in touch with us, then you can email me directly, dirk@thefetishshow.com. We're looking for guests.
Penis pictures.
Don't send me penis pictures, for God's sakes. Invites to events, products, books, videos, websites, whatever you got. Questions for Zoe or me. Suggestions for the show. Money. We'll take money. PayPal, cash.
Gift cards.
You know. All of that. We'll take all of that. You can
rolls
send that
of coins.
To dirk@thefetishshow.com. And by the way, next episode, the dominatrix rules.
Yay.
We're going to have a special panel of dominatrix besides Princess Zoe.
Amazing. I can't wait for that.
So as long as everything goes as planned, we're going to have another couple of panelists here, and we're going to have a little jam session where we talk to a bunch of dominatrix about...
You don't want to miss that.
About what's going on, what's going down.
And how it goes down.
Absolutely, because they know. So thanks for listening to The Fetish Show.
And I'd like to mention, if you'd like to advertise on our website, let us know. We need supporters. Send us in your information, and we'll be glad to put your advertisement up on thefetishshow.com website.
That's great. I'm glad you did a plug for that. We like to call them very reasonable rates.
Very, very reasonable
and
rates.
And once you get, if you get up on an episode of The Fetish Show, you stay there for life, so it's a great deal.
There you go.
All right. For Princess Zoe, this is Dirk Hooper. Until next time, dream hard.
Thanks for listening to The Fetish Show. We're always looking for interviews with models, artists, and BDSM lifestyle leaders, as well as information about events and products. For more information, check out thefetishshow.com. Contact Dirk Hooper directly by emailing dirk@thefetishshow.com.